Hi, I'm Chris Cotnor, executive producer of the DSR Network. We've been incredibly busy here over the past month. With the launch of TNR's Daily Blast, we now produce 10 shows covering foreign policy, national security, domestic politics, cyber and tech, legal, and much more. We've also just launched our redesigned website at thedsrnetwork.com. With all this content, there has never been a better time to become a member. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack community. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Donald Trump recently announced that he is now hawking something called the God Bless the USA Bible. It's inspired by Lee Greenwood's song, God Bless the USA. The Bibles are $59.99 apiece. This drew outrage from some religious leaders, but one group that's been conspicuously quiet about it are evangelical leaders. What explains this? One idea that some have offered here is that Trump is actually making subtle promises to those evangelical leaders that a second Trump term will give them what they want, which is something like an administration shaped around ideals of Christian nationalism. So this question, whether Trump is offering a Christian nationalist presidency, will be litigated heavily in the 2024 campaign, and it isn't going away. Here to discuss this today is Catherine Stewart, author of The Power Worshippers and a journalist who covers the religious right. Welcome, Catherine.
Great to be in conversation with you. Thanks for having me.
So let's start here. A notable thing about the Bible that Trump is selling is that it's expressly packaged with our national founding documents, like the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I know there's a lot of debate around the phrase Christian nationalism, but isn't that package that Trump is hawking about as explicit a Christian nationalist gesture as one can imagine?
Yes. I mean, you can hardly ask for a better example of Christian nationalism. Here he is raising money to fight off legal charges having to do with election interference and paying money to porn actresses and doing it by selling religion. Christian nationalism is basically the idea that America was founded as a so-called Christian nation and that our laws should be based on the Bible. But this ideology is really also a tool for a leadership-driven political machine that turns this mythology into political power. Trump won in 2016 by making promises to this cohort, by promising right-wing justices, by promising policies that privilege certain favored religious and political viewpoints among this cohort, and also by promising policies that would deliver both public and private money to this network and to the organizational infrastructure of this network. And they turned out the vote for him. You know, a lot of this network functions as a voter turnout machine in election cycles, and they have actually promised to do the same in 2024. I believe Faith and Freedom Coalition recently publicized, I don't recall the exact sum, but it was tens of millions of dollars that they're going to devote to getting out the vote for Donald Trump in 2024.
So Trump put out a video with this Bible. Listen to this snippet.
This Bible is a reminder that the biggest thing we have to bring back America and to make America great again is our religion. Religion is so important. It's so missing, but it's going to come back, and it's going to come back strong, just like our country is going to come back strong. In the end, we do not answer to bureaucrats in Washington. We answer to God in heaven. Christians are under siege.
In other words, God's law is higher than human law. Also notable is the implicit suggestion that he will use the power of the presidency to both restore God's law to its rightful higher place and also protect Christians from godless secular forces, from quote-unquote bureaucrats, as he says on the video, which is to say from government officials who are not on board with the plan to restore God's law. Is that a fair reading of what we just heard?
You know, what he's doing is a masterclass. He's a grifting insurrectionist demagogue who is trying to win votes by conflating a fundamentalist religion in which he does not believe with a constitution he has attempted to undermine. I mean, this is patriotic bombast in a profit-making package.
Yeah, it sounds right to me. The religion writer Robert Jones had a good piece pointing out that evangelical leaders, particularly white evangelical leaders, are not condemning what Trump is doing. And Jones noted that this is because with this project, Trump is in some sense actually fulfilling what some evangelicals want of him, right? I mean, this packaging of the Bible and our founding documents is what they want. Is that correct?
Absolutely. But this is also more identity signaling to his followers than it is a truly religious appeal. I think most people who follow Trump don't expect him to behave like a religious person. They're not going to hold him to account for his heresies or his irreligious pronouncements because they really don't believe he's out there wrestling with scripture anyway, and they don't care. I mean, for them, religion is far less about religion and theology than identity. So they basically have no interest or concern whether Trump is being blasphemous or not. I think for a good number of those who lend their support to the Christian nationalist movement, professed faith in the word of God is merely performative. In many instances, politics doesn't follow from the religion. It's the religion actually follows from the politics. The religion has been shaped to adapt to the needs of a more authoritarian form of politics. To be sure, some do have some familiarity with the Bible, or with some parts of it at least, but their religious identity has become entwined with signaling in-group membership and loyalty to their chosen leaders.
I want to pick up on what you said about authoritarian politics in this context, right? Because I think Trump's talk about this Bible sounds to a lot of liberals like grift, right? It's almost like they think it's just pandering to the evangelical base, but it's not really that, is it? I mean, it's a promise. Politico reported recently that advisors to Trump are drawing up plans to import Christian nationalist goals and values into a second Trump administration. What could that look like in concrete terms?
Wow. Well, we don't need to imagine exotic threats because the world already offers plenty of examples of what we could end up with here. I mean, let's start with Putin's Russia. It's theocratic in a certain kind of fake sense in that it's a regime that endorses a particular form of religion and attempts to impose that religion and its homophobic and patriarchal values on society. But it's more accurately described as a kleptocratic, cronyistic state with strong militaristic features, absolute suppression of free speech, absolute suppression of political opposition. And we could look around the world to other models, like with Erdogan in Turkey, who has arrested and jailed thousands of journalists and academics and political opponents. We can look to Orban, Viktor Orban in Hungary, who's criminalized basic functions of democracy, basic democratic activities. He's attacked the independence of the judiciary. He's implemented strict media controls. And, you know, in fact, much of the right explicitly celebrates. Now, there are, of course, nuances to these different countries. And what we would end up here would be distinctly American. But we can lose our freedoms in any number of ways. In fact, we've already started to. I mean, think about the underage rape victims forced to endure pregnancy and childbirth, or the women denied best practices medical care when they experience pregnancy complications or miscarriage complications. They are already living under theocratic rule.
So you mentioned in there this idea of mass persecution. And while I think that that's probably not something that would happen, this is what I find alarming. Many figures on the right, including non-religious ones, are fully bought into the message that right now the government is widely persecuting Christians and conservatives, and that the leftist masses are behind this push. It's just not at all true in any sense, but It sounds as if they're currently manufacturing a pretext to undertake mass persecution directed at people like us. You throw in Trump's vow to use the government to protect God, as he said on that video. And what's the worst case scenario here, realistically?
Well, I want to pick up on what you said about the persecution complex, because it's really important to their movement. It's really about the cultivation of fear. It's about making people afraid that, you know, they're going to lose everything they hold dear, every last dollar. They're going to change their gender against their will and things like that. I mean, if you really spend time in the far right in disinformation bubble, or if you go to Reawaken America gatherings or any number of sort of religious right gatherings, this is what you hear. You hear the demonization of people to the left of them. Anyone to the left of them is no longer considered a good faith political opponent, like a member of the loyal opposition. Democrats are described as demonic, satanic, under the order of the Illuminati or whatever. And what we're really hearing is this cultivation of fear and the sense that we're in an absolute emergency. We're facing the apocalypse. Any measure, no matter how dramatic, is necessary in order to save the Republic. And that does set the stage, frankly, for political violence. It offers a permission structure for political violence. So I certainly don't make predictions, but a lot of the authoritarian experts are sounding the alarm with the kind of rhetoric that we're hearing today.
I think it's not an accident that January 6th had a lot of appeal to evangelical Christians. What we really see there is that they saw January 6th as kind of a last stand in defense of the type of country that they want. I want to ask you something about Trump, though, and his identity and his personal features. It seems to me that a lot of liberals get something fundamentally wrong. They say, LOL, look, the guy who boasted about sexual assault and is personally as amoral as anyone can get, he rips people off constantly, he's crassly materialist and so forth. It's how funny is it that he's practically worshipped by evangelicals? And it is absurd, but at the same time, Trump's sins and transgressions are a feature of his attractiveness to evangelicals, right? I mean, he's a flawed vessel. He was sent by God to carry out various things, and he's done that, appointing three Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe v. Wade. To them, the fact that he's such a flawed vessel is part of God's plan. Is that right?
That's true. This is a movement that has long held democracy in contempt, and Trump behaves with the lawlessness of an authoritarian. He appeals in this way to the authoritarian impulses of his supporters. I mean, look, it's not like Mussolini and his followers were frankly all devout Catholics when they came into power. In fact, Mussolini was an atheist whose followers brutalized priests and Catholic lay people who opposed fascist rule. And yet, as fascism took hold, a faction of the church became an integral part of Mussolini's regime, and he embraced a form of clerical fascism. So he, like Trump, understood very well the utility of bringing reactionary religious authorities onto his side in order to consolidate that more authoritarian or fascistic form of political power. They tend to reinforce one another, and they are frequently elements of this identitarian fascist project, whether it's we're talking about 21st century America or 20th century Italy.
I do want to ask you about something you said earlier. You brought up Christian identity politics. David French made an argument recently that was interesting. He said that the way to understand this kind of confluence of Trumpism and Christian nationalism is that millions of Americans have come to believe the fate of their church is very much bound up in whether Trump will be elected president again. He's called this Christian identity politics and Christian supremacy as well, David French, I mean. And at its core, it's about domination, French said. I think much of what Trump said in that video can be understood in those terms, right? Though, ironically, it's constantly presented as Christians defending themselves from us.
That's absolutely true. You know, a feature of the Christian nationalist movement, a key feature, are these organizational networks that draw conservative-leaning pastors in, and they offered presentations to them. I think about groups like Watchmen on the Wall or Faith Wins or Church United. They draw conservative-leaning pastors into these networks. They do gatherings for them. Sometimes they offer them free trips to Washington, D.C. They do presentations that are designed to convince them that they need to turn out their congregations to vote for these ultra-conservative political candidates. They give them very sophisticated tools for doing so, including very sophisticated data tools. So the movement knows very well that if you can get the pastors, you can often get the congregations. I mean, they know that pastors are often the most trusted sources of information within their communities. And the consequences, we see them right now. I mean, this is a movement that represents a minority of the country, but they punch above their political weight because they're so organized and mobilized. I've attended some of these pastor gatherings. I've attended Watchmen on the Wall, Church United, Faith Wins pastor gatherings, where there will be dozens or even in one instance, hundreds of pastors in a room. And they will tell them that, you know, America's on the precipice. The left is trying to cancel Christians. Their faith is at stake. And they get them, you know, really worked up and persuaded that they're sitting on the precipice and they need to get their congregations to turn out to vote a certain way. And that's exactly what they do.
Well, you're getting at the big picture here, I think, and I want to ask you about that. So the religious right has been a crucial part of the Republican coalition for at least 40 years, right? And throughout those decades, they've really provided the ground troops in elections. So there is sort of a democratic side to the religious right. I mean, they are really good organizers, and they have participated in democracy in a highly successful way. But there's also the authoritarian streak, which really seems to be kind of coming to the fore right now. So are we seeing something different now with the religious right in some broad sense relative to what it's been over the past few decades?
Absolutely. And I think that's a consequence of decades of infrastructure building. The movement has as much power that it does because of decades of investment in this dense organizational network. And what's really different is how explicitly authoritarian it has become. This apparatus was very much in evidence in the run-up to January 6th. So, for example, you had Christian nationalist pastors and leaders involved in organizing the Jericho March. Many pastors and members of the movement's organizational leadership were critical in promoting the big lie. So, to your point, it has really changed. And the fact remains that Christian nationalism was an inescapable part of the attempted coup and remains a cornerstone of the MAGA movement and Trumpism. Look, for many years, the religious right claimed they just wanted a seat at the table in the noisy form of American democracy. They just wanted to have their values heard, and that's all fine and good. But what was much more hidden is the movement's deep hostility to democracy and to the principles of pluralism and equality that represent the best of the American promise.
Yes, and one shudders to imagine what the Christian nationalist right will think and do if Trump loses the election again and if he again attempts to overturn that loss. Catherine Stewart, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.